United States versus Sutton.
Please report. My name is David Karp. I'm counsel for the defendant appellant Tanya Sutton. The issue in this case is whether or not non-compliance with the rule of announcement warrants suppression. Now, this court issued a decision in Langford, which unfortunately was denied in bank review just a few days after I filed my reply brief. However, Langford ought not to be followed. Langford ought to be isolated to its facts. Langford was a case involving guns and drugs, clear danger to the police. I have submitted additional authority to the court. I can't refer to it. I just did it this morning. I apologize for that, but I just discovered it. However, I believe, and I will submit authority to this, that in fact Langford is in violation of two U.S. Supreme Court cases, United States versus Miller, which I cited in my reply brief, and Richards versus Wisconsin, which all parties cited. The Miller case preceded the U.S. Supreme Court's pronouncement in Wilson versus Arkansas that the rule of announcement has a constitutional status and that it forms part of the reasonableness analysis under the Fourth Amendment. Nonetheless, in Miller, simply on non-constitutional grounds, the United States Supreme Court upheld suppression, said suppression is a remedy for violation of the rule. Langford also, as it stands now, violates Richards versus Wisconsin because it creates a blanket rule, and with all due respect, it creates a blanket rule that's broader than the blanket rule that the Wisconsin Supreme Court had created in the lower opinion in Richards. The Wisconsin Supreme Court simply created a blanket rule with regard to drug felony cases, finding that there never need be compliance. However, if you read Langford outside of its facts, then it would basically apply to all cases in which non-compliance with the announcement rule is an issue. So it has to be offensive to the Constitution. It has to be offensive to the Fourth Amendment. The hallmark of the Fourth Amendment is specificity. Richards clearly says that when courts analyze these allegations of non-compliance with the announcement rule, that there need be case-by-case analysis. You have to look at the particular facts of the case. In this particular case, first of all, I want to point out that this involves a home. It involves a house. It's textual to the Fourth Amendment. It's the heart of the Fourth Amendment. The chief evil against which the Fourth Amendment is directed is invasion of the home. Secondly, there are children present in the home, young children. We should have known about this. Next, Ms. Sutton was suspected of a non-violent, white-collar sort of crime, creating forged checks and creating being involved in a plan to cash those. It's not a drug case. The destruction of evidence concern that we often have in these cases is not present. It's really hard to flush a computer down the toilet. Admittedly, one could destroy computer files, but actually that happened in this case way before, and yet the authorities were able to retrieve the information on the computer disk. There's another concern in this case as well, which is that careful analysis of the facts shows that this is a duplex and that the part of the duplex that the police raided, where Ms. Sutton lives, did not have an address on the outside of the building. It did it some distance from the building. So there is a concern, of course, specifically with regard to the refusal element of the announcement rule to establish that we're at the correct address. was it really safer for the police to rush in without waiting to be admitted? There was some concern about dogs. They didn't hear any dogs, but there had been some talk about dogs in briefing. Apparently the screen door had some damage to the screen. However, I would submit that it's not necessarily safer if there had been pit bulls for police to rush into the premises where they might have been cornered by the dogs. In any case, there was no resistance offered to the police. There were no dogs actually in the house, and there were no guns in the house. The issue of reasonableness of noncompliance with the rule simply cannot be left to the discretion of the police. The Fourth Amendment does sometimes pose a shackle to law enforcement. It's not meant necessarily to advance law enforcement interests. Now, should inevitable discovery apply? I submit no. The warrant execution is directly connected to the illegal entry, and the independent source doctrine would not serve to justify noncompliance either. There was no other investigation proceeding in this case. Let's not forget that Wilson poses a constitutional presumption in favor of announcement. Now, it's not ironclad, and it can be counterbalanced by law enforcement interests, but the presumption is in favor of announcement. The presumption is not in favor of non-announcement. And the waiting for refusal element is an important interest. Governments often tend to belittle the importance of this, but this has been repeatedly supported as being a substantial concern by the U.S. Supreme Court. That is, it is a substantial interest. It's not a little thing to allow the person to actually voluntarily admit the police. There was indeed a breaking in this case. This court has held that there need not be a padlocked door broken in for a breaking to occur. The compliance here, compliance would not have been a useless gesture, because there's nothing to show that Ms. Sutton or any other occupant, her two children, were aware of the presence of the police until they had actually raided the house. Suppression is an appropriate remedy. Criminal defendants people charged with crimes have a motivation in order to challenge a search. If we depend on civil lawsuits in order to enforce the Fourth Amendment, it will reduce the Fourth Amendment to a form of words which it is not. I would submit to this court that under the flexible reasonableness requirement of the Fourth Amendment, that noncompliance with the announcement rule under these facts warrants suppression. And if there are no questions, I would ask to reserve my remaining time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Steve Elke. I'm with the United States Attorney's Office. Dan Graber, my colleague, was responsible for the case below in the district court. 2 points I'd like to talk about. The first one is the question of whether the knock and announce rule was violated. There was an evidentiary hearing taken in this case, and in this case, as you will know by reading the record, the law enforcement recognized that knock and announce applied, and they had every intention to knock and announce when they came upon the duplex. And I should just add, by the way, that the officer testified in the hearing, I think it's at page 20, that she knew which one of the duplexes was the correct one because they had seen the number. When questioned further, she couldn't remember whether it was on the door or whether it was on the poster, where it was. She couldn't remember there was a doorbell, but there was clearly recognition by the officers as to which was the correct duplex. But in any event, the officers go up, they have their plan as to what they're going to do in terms of going into the residence. They're going to be in a row, and the officer describes the screen door, which she's confined with. She describes how the screen door opens one direction and the other door opens in the other direction, that she could see that the door was ajar. She described it as looking at it, if someone had opened it and then the wind or something had shut it. So it was closed, but not fully closed. She goes to knock on the door, and what happens? The door opens up. Now the question then is, whether what she did was reasonable in that circumstance, and what she decided to do, and there's the testimony about the silhouette and the frontal effect and so on. And there had been a briefing beforehand from the Madison Police Department in which the pit dogs were discussed, the fact that previously people had been seen who had prior drug convictions and so on. So there was some concern for officer safety. She made the decision to go in and announce loudly search warrant police. And as Magistrate Crocker said in his report, I'll just read quickly one sentence. Officer Riley had to make a snap decision, and she chose officer safety as she interpreted it under the circumstances known to her. It was not the only decision she could have made, but it was a reasonable one. That's at record 62 at page 8. That factual finding should be reviewed for a clear error basis. It was not clearly erroneous, and judged from the standpoint or the viewpoint of the officer, which is the proper way of looking at this case, that is a reasonable thing for her to have done based on the facts as she knew them. So there was no violation here. It was a reasonable thing for the officer to have done. Assuming the court finds that there was a violation of the knock and announce rule, the Fourth Amendment, I would submit to you that suppression is not an appropriate remedy. And there's some discussion in the reply brief that this court should wait to issue a decision because in the Banks decision there's been a petition for cert accepted in the Supreme Court. That would have no effect in this case for the following reason. Number one, Lankford is the controlling Seventh Circuit case in this circuit. And in Lankford, there's a bright line rule essentially that suppression is not a proper remedy.
What about how he tried to distinguish Lankford? Counsel did. By arguing, I think, the Miller case and some other case that...
Assuming, Your Honor, that if the Supreme Court and Banks, let's say they get to the question of whether suppression is permitted or should not be permitted in this type of case, I would submit that no one can say what the Supreme Court will do, but I think it's clear that if they don't give a bright-line rule, that there will be some sort of proportionality test, similar to the Espinoza case out of this circuit, in which the question is, does society's interest in having the evidence outweigh suppression? And the question should focus on what conduct is it that we're deterring in this case. In this case, you have officers who obtain a search warrant, you have officers that meet ahead of time, and have a briefing as to what to do. You have an officer who admits that the knock and announce rule should apply. You have an officer who goes up the door and actually does knock on the door, so she's already beginning to comply with the rule itself. And what happens is she's confronted then with the situation where the door opens and she has to make a decision what to do. So it's a fairly narrow scope of conduct which would even be deterred in this case, I would submit, Your Honor, so that no matter what, suppression would not be appropriate in this case, whether the court applies the Lankford type analysis or whether it applies proportionality or a balancing type of approach in this case.
Thank you.
That would be my response to that, Your Honor. And that essentially concludes my remarks in terms of this case, unless one of the other judges has a question.
That's fine. Thank you, Counsel. Mr. Carr? You have 2 minutes, Mr. Carr.
Just briefly, in terms of the issue of whether or not there was certainty that the police were at the right place, Officer Riley did experience some confusion about that, but if one looks carefully at the affidavit for the search warrant, it states clearly that there is no number at 2804 Boxwood. There is one at 2802 next door. The number is on the mailbox, which is on what we call, at least in Madison, Wisconsin, the terrace, on the other side of the sidewalk. And the police did make their approach from the back of the building, not the front of the building. There wasn't an error, as it turns out, in terms of address, but there was that potentiality, and that is a concern. That's one of the policies for allowing the refusal elements. There was clearly not compliance with the rule because basically what happens was the door opens, the officer steps in and then announces, that's clear from the record, that it was announcement simultaneous with entry. Will the U.S. Supreme Court directly address the dispute about whether or not suppression is the proper remedy in Banks? It might, but it already has in Miller. It's already said that blanket rules cannot be used in this situation. Proportionality tests, these are significant interests. And the fact that they are significant, and particularly when we're talking about the home, when we're talking about a highly protected area, suppression is an appropriate remedy. Thank you.
Mr. Karp, you were appointed to counsel in this case, were you?
Otter, I'm not worthy of you.
Well, you did a fine job. Thank you for your attendance. The court will be in recess until tomorrow morning at 9:30.